Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 148th episode of the Mod State Podcast. My friend, how are you?
I'm great, sir. How are you?
Oh, living the dream. No place I'd rather be, you know? Yes.
We're back together, and it's like good times, only different.
Yeah, except for another podcast to talk about, right?
Episode. They had a great theme song of that show. You remember? Good times.
Yeah, sure do. Yeah. Well, anyway, we didn't do it on the last episode, so I'll do it now. Thank you for all of our listeners in any corner of the world that you're actually in, because that's happening and it's pretty awesome. So obviously you're listening to us somewhere, whether that's iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, Stitcher, iTunes, Podomatic, FM, sure I'm missing one.
SoundCloud.
Yeah. Everywhere. So
waiting on the paper boy to bring me some good news.
Oh, Brian. Goodness gracious.
Hey, you know there's a new tick species in the US.
Is there?
And the news is just
boy, oh boy.
Live for the stuff.
Well, speaking of the news living for stuff and whataboutisms, goodness gracious, you sent me an article and you brought up a really good point. Of course, I'm going to pull it up right now. Okay, so this was dated March 26, 2012. And this was a Reuters article. And the title of the article is Obama Tells Russians... Goodness, I just had an alert on my phone and it got the title went away. Obama tells Russians, Medvedev. Obama tells Russia's Medvedev more flexibility after election. And the beginning of the article says President Barack Obama was caught on camera on Monday assuring outgoing Russian president that he will have more flexibility to deal with contentious issues like missile defense after the U.S. presidential election. So, yeah. So you were like, hey, what if... Well, you can frame the context.
No. If, you were doing just fine. I like where you were going with that.
So the question is, what if... Let me try to frame the way you were saying this. Essentially... If this is what Donald Trump had said to Putin, had said there'll be more flexibility after the election or after, who knows, the midterms or something like that, our media would have went berserk crazy trying to figure out more flexibility, what did this mean, etc. And I don't think Obama really got too much flack from that. If I mean, I'm thinking back to 2012. This is, you know,
I mean, it was an issue. I remember Paul Ryan cried foul. It's the same thing. You see these memes, and yes, again, it is apples and oranges, but it talks about, well, okay, so the Nixon administration, is what, a handful of guys broke into the DNC four times, wiretapped them, and people went to prison. President Obama authorized likely illegal NSA program that wiretapped much of the country, and no bigs. Well, that's kind of along the same, you know?
So when I initially approached this, I had said, well, here's the thing, though. In whether he's got the media backing him or not, this would be President Obama at the time, whether he had this sort of mainstream left media that was sort of... little bit of a blind eye to this, I still brought up the point. I said, it isn't necessarily apples and oranges. It's the idea of, look, I'm granting more flexibility after the election. President Donald Trump meets with Vladimir Putin. It's not exactly apples and oranges because they met with Russian presidents. The difference here is that there was less ambiguity in context to what President Obama was talking to with outgoing president than the way Donald...
It was clearly in reference to the missile defense issue with NATO and Europe.
And you can take a little bit of... there's a little bit of caution needed here when you're talking about what kind of flexibility Obama
is. Right, in a way, it's a, like I said, precast, it doesn't that almost, in from a certain perspective, make it worse?
Yeah.
The fact that he said, hey, this geopolitical thing, hey, don't worry about it, we'll work it out after. Because if you follow the clip one through, Medvedev clearly is affirmative in this, saying, yeah, we'll talk about it. So you guys know this, for it's a foregone conclusion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you can, in a way, have a little bit of whataboutism, and not necessarily to Obama and Trump, but really to the response to the two type of things here.
This more goes to the media coverage of it, if you will.
Yeah, again, I would say... the difference between... So the other part of this, too, is if... And I do believe this. If there was no issue with Russian meddling, if there was no potential for collusion or ongoing investigation with an entity like Russia, and Donald Trump went to Helsinki and met with Vladimir Putin and had a two-hour closed-door meeting or whatever it was, I don't think you have the same backlash. The problem is that he's having these very untransparent meetings with a person or an entity for whom he's under investigation for colluding with. So if that wasn't part of this, I don't know that you would see any of it. Even if he was still the kind of quote-unquote asshole that he is on a more broader international playing field, I just don't think you would see the same sort of hype and issue that people take with meeting with someone like Vladimir Putin for 2 hours with just interpreters. So,
did they want cameras in there? Did they want to see the whole, hey, this is what he said, the interpretation? Well, what do people want? And I'm asking that genuinely.
It's a good question. It is, first off, it is transparency. Obviously, there is an ongoing investigation for collusion and potentially conspiracy. But beyond that, there's a huge ambiguity to what the whole point of it was. Now, when President Obama says something like flexibility in terms of missile defense, it's basically saying, look, we can pave the way for diplomacy later on. There was far more ambiguity in the meeting with Trump and Putin because there really wasn't any framework for it. And the same thing happened with another dictator not too long ago in North Korea when he sat down and there was a real ambiguity to what they talked about and what they were trying to hash out. So the real problem here is, what are we talking about? What is going on? Why are we coming down on NATO, and then we have these chummy 2 hour conversations with just interpreters? If the whole backdrop here with the whole collusion and conspiracy wasn't there, I don't know that it would be as big of a deal. To go deeper and more specific between the two administrations, at the end of the day, there's always going to be the shadowy backroom deals that aren't partisan, they aren't bipartisan, they just are the government. They don't care about the politics. And there's going to be these weird deals, like buckets of cash delivered to Iran under the Obama administration. There's always going to be these sort of shady deals. So yeah,
President Trump is wrong for saying we need to sanction them.
Yeah, I mean,
we need to funnel money into bad actors geopolitically. We know this. So he's wrong for reinstating sanctions. But a deal, as he called it, and I believe President Trump called these balls and strikes correctly when he said, what kind of deal is this when it just delays them getting a nuke? And when the reality is they get to keep funneling money into whatever group against Saudi Arabia they want to. Do you think President Trump could get away with pallets of cash there?
Well,
he could get away with it, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. But I think I see your point. I mean, obviously, his messaging towards like an Iranian regime is a lot different from Obama. So if Obama's there for a deal and it involves $4 billion in cash, then it seems to go along with the narrative. Now, if Trump comes down real hard on Iran and there's $4 billion of cash dropped off, that becomes really weird real quick. So... I don't think, getting back into the geopolitics of like the Iranian nuclear deal, I get it. I think what people were really kind of butthurt about was the amount of time that was spent into this. And I don't think, Israel came out and they said, look, these guys are bad actors. They're just doing this underneath our noses. Even though there wasn't a whole lot of evidence that showed that, the evidence kind of showed that they were complying. But again, we brought up a good point. Would America let foreign inspectors come on their top secret military bases? Probably not. So, yeah, I mean, there's...
Well, it's every nation's interest. It's in their best interest to pursue their best interests. Okay, that's our right to do that, Iran to do theirs, yeah, et cetera.
And Trump, Trump brought up a good point in his campaign, and I didn't fault him for it, where a lot of people did. He said, I think he had told international leaders, he goes, you put your nation first. You do. Why would you not put your nation first?
Globalists have a problem with it. People that want, you know, one world kumbaya, which is BS, never going to happen. You know, so this idea that, oh, well, we're putting the needs of, you know, our people. You're damn right we are.
Yeah. And, you know, I think where people take a little bit of problem with that is, you know, let's say, and I'm just spitballing here. This is not necessarily something I believe fully, and you could probably poke holes in this. But let's take Nation X, and their overall GDP is far lower than the United States. They're an emerging economy. They're working on their budding democracy. And then you've got the United States. Now, the United States has a GDP that well exceeds Nation X, and it has an established democracy. Capital moves in and out of this area. It's a place of innovation and venture capitalism. So both countries have a right and should put their interests first. However, when it comes to sort of a humanitarian or humanities type of approach, would it make more sense if there's a lot of Nation X's out there that and several nations like the United States, that those nations take on a leadership role, and in that leadership role do a lot of development and a lot of diplomacy with those emerging nations so that they are on the right foot. I think that's what people like to see and were liked to see under Obama. It wasn't that Obama didn't put America first, but he very much was an active leader in the overall international playing field. And there was a lot more of nation building and nation collaboration that you don't see with Donald Trump. And there's a huge percentage of the United States population that is totally backing Trump on that foreign policy initiative. But there's also a huge chunk of the population that really liked the sort of diplomacy, the State Department look.
So in humanitarian terms, I also like the fact that President Obama reinvented the NSA. I mean, he made it a government organization that really listens to you.
Really listens to you. No, I mean, it's definitely there. I mean, as I'm saying, diplomacy and nation building, Obama had quite the...
Spying on our allies. That worked out.
He had quite the re-upping of the Patriot Act, the NSA, and then a fairly spectacular predator drone.
He'd rather make a limp deal with Iran and stand ensconced from Israel.
Yeah,
you know, whereas Trump's doing the exact opposite, and I'm going, okay.
I mean, I guess he's putting money where his mouth is kind of thing, or however you do that. I mean, it's kind of funny that Obama would be super diplomatic, but he's running predator and surveillance drones up the east coast of Africa and in the Suez Canal and all
around. But Israel was a bad actor.
Yeah, I mean, we could go back and forth on this all day.
No, I'm not addressing that to you. I'm more kind of looking at the media here going, true. Okay, you guys, you could make it at least a little sexier when you're picking sides. You could make it look a little more even-keeled. You don't even try.
Nah, and I get that. I mean, that's why I've implored on this podcast from the inception, is that people just read into things a little bit more. And it doesn't become, I mean, what people will say at the end of the day is that I'm picking the lesser of the two evils. And I get that to a point, but I mean, it's a beautiful point as a centrist to be able to sit back and look at both sides. I mean, it doesn't mean that I don't get to pick which one I think is better, or I don't pick lesser of the two evils. I certainly do. But it's just not as black and white as people would like it to be. And we sort of just brush off the things we don't like and just sort of sweep those under the rug. Like, it didn't really happen. Like, yeah, it kind of sucked. It was collateral. But the whole thing was really great. As opposed to then, when there's very similar things going on in this administration today, that it becomes a huge nightmare and it's a huge issue.
President Obama was more eloquent.
Yes, that is true.
He was much more, shall we say, easily diplomatic. I mean,
It's
easier to take from President Obama these sorts of geopolitical criticisms because he knows the lingo. I mean the man knows his way around the stage. I mean,
let's face it. Yes.
President Obama was much better in these arenas, and I'm not insulting President Trump, but I'm saying one is a private enterprise mogul turned president. One is a lifelong somebody that was involved in as a social organizer, a community organizer, the social realm in Chicago, that became a senator.
Look, there is one thing to be said that when you are able to orate well, when you're able to be diplomatic and be a politician, you can sort of muddy the waters. And I'm not saying that that's what he did, because there's a fair amount of what Obama did that I do agree with. However, when you do have someone like Donald Trump that is not an orator, who is not articulate, he really just manages to get out exactly what he's feeling in a really weird way. And it really doesn't leave a lot for dissecting, if you will. You can go back and look at Obama policy and things that happened in the Obama administration, and you'd be surprised what you might find that you completely disagree with, especially in a sort of military type of mindset.
Oh, Lord.
But you don't. I mean, there's. When it comes to diplomacy and to be able to talk and express your ideas and have a gift for political gab, you kind of lose sight of maybe the things that are going on. However, it's not as easy to lose sight of what's going on with someone like Donald Trump, because he's freely speaking his mind in a way that I think maybe the average American is a bit bemused and befuddled by what he's actually trying to say, but it's a lot easier to follow than it is maybe an Obama who's giving a 25-minute, very eloquent speech.
That's true. There's definitely multiple facets to this, and again, as I maintained in a column I wrote for the site, a large portion of this is, again, I feel like, especially our generation, we look in the mirror wanting to see this beautiful, picturesque, oh, this is America. Because I keep hearing this and seeing this and reading this. Oh, this is not America. Oh, really? Well, then tell me what this America is. A decade into Keeping Up with the Kardashians, where it's okay for Kim to say, I want to be a role model to little girls. And people take her seriously. I'm going, you got famous for performing fellatio on Ray J. And they're like, who's that? Exactly.
Exactly.
You know, regardless of who it is, okay, but we take that seriously. But our generation has the temerity to say that we don't like what the president says. And I'm going, it's like the young lady recently that said, well, I don't really like his speaking style. She told me this, seriously. I overheard this conversation with a group of folks. I don't really like President Trump's speaking style and all this. I'm going, well, tell me this. How many, have you listened to the Four Freedoms speech? Did you listen to any of President Kennedy's addresses, the Cuban Missile Crisis, detente with communists from President Nixon? Did you listen to Mr. Gorbachev take down that wall? I mean, what do you have to compare it to? Do you listen to great speeches? Well, no. Then what are you complaining about? 47% of the country could be bothered to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't really get it when it comes to our generation that crying about this, going, okay, I get it. We had this massive party planned. We were going to bust that glass ceiling wide open and send God knows what sort of vitriol flying through it on party night. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Sorry, folks.
And you know what? To be fair, you know, it might have taken someone like Donald Trump to sort of politically motivate a lot of our generation. And whether they're doing it for the real researched reasons or not, you know, getting out to vote, I'm not telling you that you need to be completely researched to do it. It's your right to vote. And sometimes it takes a catalyst like this to get people a little bit more motivated and a little bit more engaged. So who knows? I mean, my real...
It's just not sexy to take a selfie there, and it's also illegal.
Well, it's not my fear necessarily, but maybe just for our generation in general that I hope.
I just fear the generation.
I hope that I remain more optimistic, yet I do fear a bit that we run the risk
of... Well, you are more optimistic on our generation.
That's true. That we do hopefully retain some sort of momentum for political engagement over the long period. You know, I just fear that the second that things get back to the way that they like it and want it, you have this situation arises where another Donald Trump is in power. Now, not saying that I'm fearful of the president that's currently in office. That's not the point. I think the point is the loss of momentum for political engagement.
Because, you know, there's a disorder now. I forget the exact words, but it's TAD. Trump anxiety disorder or something like that. Where
really?
People that have had to deal with this, and I'm going, oh my God.
Trump anxiety disorder.
Like, it's something like, I'll send you, I kid you not, it's this, maybe you can put it in the show notes, but it's people that have not been able to cope with the loss of Hillary. And I'm going, okay, I'm not saying that the best person won. I'm not saying the best person didn't win, but this is absurd. This you know, this doctor was on the, I think it was Reuters or Bloomberg saying, yeah, I've had patients that are saying, is he going to blow the whole thing up tomorrow? I'm going, all right.
Wow. You know, is that a bit of projection maybe?
I don't know. I'm going, how dare our generation? We can't be bothered to care. Yeah. Okay. About any, everybody, you know, is going to be a pop star or, you know, a sports star. And when that doesn't happen, we accept whatever modicum of a job we can get to mill through our day while focusing on whatever it is that we're looking at that we're holding in our hands all day. Not going to go there. But so we can tweet and Instagram, but our feelings. And I'm going, all right. This is really, I'm serious. It's beyond the pale. It's getting nauseating.
Hmm. Well,
okay, he's gonna destroy everything.
Well, maybe your optimism can be renewed when we have the largest
of our
generation's turnout for voting in a midterm. Maybe. I don't know.
Hey, you know what? I don't care. Well, I'm not gonna say I don't care who they vote for, because that 1938 Germany, that would make me eat my words. But I would just soon they come out and vote. We don't have any candidates like that, so I'm kidding, folks. But, you know, I would be happy. You know what? I could say, hey, the House elections are every 2 years. It's the people's house for a reason. It's the closest to the people. Fine. Let's have a blue wave. If they're 2/3 of our generation could be bothered, it's illegal for your employer to tell you not to vote. So if they could be bothered to come out and vote. But I'm really to the point where I agree, as much as I hate to repeat the story, when my brother snapped at one of our church friends who wasn't even registered to vote, who was crying about the system, and he said, look, you don't have any right to even discuss this. You can't even be bothered to exercise our most basic constitutional, our most basic American freedom. You're not even registered to vote.
Yeah, and look, man, I'll be the first to say I've been guilty of not voting before, and
are you registered to vote, Nate?
I am. Yes, I am. I am.
Okay, you know, it's one thing. Look, I haven't voted in municipal elections before, where it ended up sure enough being 96% of the vote. But I wonder how many people were crying and gnashing of teeth when Rehnquist and Company ended the recounts in December of 2000. And Florida was decided by what? Less than 800 votes?
Mm-hmm.
How many Floridians didn't go to the polls?
Yeah.
Forgot to go.
Oops.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people are playing the saxophone. Bill Clinton played the harmonica. Our generation just plays the fool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious. It's kind of the point. I'm sick of the... Obviously, I won't wax pontificate about the entitlement mentality anymore. My mentality is you're not entitled to shit, okay? But this business of, oh, well, the whole thing's come down. Well, what have you done to build up, prop up the system? What do you bring to the table?
What is,
you
know, it that
it
you...
goes back to,
what is it,
well, it
that
goes
you...
back to your idol RFK, his older brother, where he said, you're asking... Nowadays, I'm paraphrasing, you're asking now, what is it that our country can do for us? What has our generation done for the country?
Hmm.
Other than generate bad music and become a bunch of spoiled brat tattooed athletes.
I mean, it is a good challenge to posit. I really do. I mean,
have we served anybody but ourselves?
Well, I mean, I think you could make a fair argument for it. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe the tide's turning. Maybe the midterm election will be this momentum of engagement that we have so lost.
Hey, you know what? Let the Democrats take the House by 100 seats to prove me wrong.
Let's do it, man.
Well, hey, I'll acknowledge. I'll say, hey, you got me.
Gotcha. Well, hey, man, we're at 25 minutes, and I'm going to go to bed, and love talking to you about this kind of stuff. And
do you?
I do, yeah. It's actually my birthday tomorrow, so.
It is. I was going to, you know, send you. Well, I won't say it on here.
Well, but, yes, please don't.
Yeah. So we'll end off with this, okay? So
yes.
What do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 120?
What do you call it?
Your Honor. So what do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 60?
What's that?
Senator.
Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy.
Well,
that was kind of the... that joke doesn't play into there, so we're good.
All right. So this one ties into the last episode, actually. I've got one for you here. Now, this is rough, folks. I'm Roman Catholic, so bear with me, folks. This is so you Roman Catholics out there, you can't get mad. I'm not being anti-Catholic here. But so President Clinton, Bill Clinton, and the Pope died on the same day. Rough day. And due to this bizarre clerical error, the Pope actually for one whole day went to hell. Bill Clinton went to heaven. So the Pope, he gets to hell, and everybody suddenly, of course, realized the mistake. Due to an issue with the Union, of course, they couldn't swap the two until the following 24 hours, so the Pope had to spend the night in hell. President Clinton spent the night in heaven. The next day, everything got worked out. On his way up to heaven, the Pope actually ran into Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton asked the Pope, hey, sugar cookie, you know, how was your night in hell? And the Pope said, well, it was very educational. I've learned a lot from this whole ordeal, but now that I'm going to heaven, I've been waiting my entire life to meet the Virgin Mary. And Bill Clinton looks at him and goes, oh, hey, sorry, you should have gotten there yesterday.
Boy, oh boy. Yes, that comes from it's a better joke for a Catholic to tell than for me to tell.
That, if I wasn't Catholic, I'd probably be going to hell with gasoline drawers on for that one, but...
Well, you can meet me there, brother.
We'll know more people there.
That's true. That's very true. Goodness.
Nixon! Napoleon! Yeah. What's up, guys?
Hey, what's going on? Always wanted to grab a beer with y'all.
Mick Jagger, come on down.
Goodness gracious. So, well, my friend, as always, it's an honor and privilege. And,
it is. Thanks for having me again.
Indeed.
And how many more of these till I'm fired?
And hopefully none. So, until next time, my friend.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.